Hello again and welcome back. A major international seminar is taking place in St. Louis this week involving some 600 mental health professionals from 20 countries and 35 states. They'll be looking at community-based treatment and recovery. One of the many items being discussed is the issue of the stigma experienced by people suffering from mental illness. We're talking about that today with Mike Keller, Executive Director of Independence Center, which helps adults with mental illness live and work in the community. Brittany Adams-Jenkins, a diagnosed schizophrenic, has been helped by Independence Center. And Mark Lanier is President-elect of the Board of Directors of Clubhouse International, primary sponsor of the seminar. His organization seeks solutions to mental illness issues through psychosocial rehabilitation. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
It's nice to be here.
I'll start with you, Mike. The stigma has been called by someone, and it may have been you, a human rights emergency. Well, what do you mean by that?
I mean that we have a battle on our hands to change perceptions about mental illness. The number of disasters that we've had, like Newtown and Columbine, don't help except to shine a light on an issue that's been around for a long time. But unfortunately, the byproduct of that visibility is that there's a fear factor, and we now have to not only overcome the misunderstanding of mental illness, but that fear factor. We've got a fight akin to the civil rights battle, to gay and lesbian rights. We had a plenary yesterday that focused on how those issues, public opinion shifted, and what do we need to do to create a similar shift for mental illness.
Mark, this whole issue of the violence that was just alluded to here really is a problem. We've talked about that in this program a number of times. There's always an association made between gun control and that kind of violence with mental health. Big problem to deal with.
Yes, absolutely. And the recent incident in Washington at the U.S. Navy Yards is a wonderful example. Here was an American, a good soldier, serving our nation, who, like many people, was experiencing the onset of mental health issues and psychological disabilities. He actually went into a VA hospital in Washington. He had the courage to go in to a VA hospital in our nation's capital and say, "I'm having psychological issues." But the services and the networks and the awareness was not in place so that he could get the help. And then he became increasingly isolated, and violence, which had not been acted upon fellow humans, turned to violence acted upon 12 people who were now dead. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue our nation has to share responsibility for, because we have some of the solutions that we can use to help people truly recover back, and social integration, peer support, which you find in clubhouses, is a very, very important element of that, in addition to drugs and in addition to psychological therapy. Yeah.
Brittany, let me turn to you and ask you, during the course of your experience, what sort of a reaction have you experienced connected with the stigma issue?
Well, for a long time, I was looked at as being weird, or I was ostracized because I was experiencing different issues that I didn't know what it was. And I didn't really, nobody told me that you should get help. I ended up going through a lot of traumatic things and having a lot of traumatic experiences connected with my mental illness. It led me to using drugs to self-medicate, because the medicine that they did give me, I was sleeping my life away. So when I finally did get the good help, that was through the Independence Center. And I had been experiencing mental health issues since I was 10. So I've been hearing voices since I was 10 years old. And now I don't hear the voices, because now I'm on a good medication regimen and in therapy to deal with those traumatic issues. So now my life is, I feel like my life has just begun you know, because I was sick for so long.
What did Independence Center do to cause this turn?
Well, the first thing they did was get me connected with a good psychiatrist and therapist through their program, Midwest Psychiatry. Then I volunteered to do different jobs around the clubhouse and became more engaged in the clubhouse, the work order day. And the staff there was very helpful and supportive. They made me feel wanted, appreciated, and needed. You know, they didn't ostracize me. They did not look at me like I was less than a person because I was suffering from mental illness. You know, they helped me embrace my mental illness and say, just because I have a mental illness, that does not define who I am.
Mike, that seems to me to be a very common sense approach. And yet I gather from what I've been reading that it's relatively new, a relatively new approach.
Relatively new, but it's this idea that people living with mental illness need their biggest enemy is isolation. If they can be integrated back into society, it's the most therapeutic thing that can happen for them. You know, we refer to the people who use our program as members, and that can be seen as kind of a cute neologism. But it isn't. It's very fundamental. When you think about the word membership, what does it mean? It means there's someplace I belong. And I've had many members tell me over the years that until they found this program, until they found a clubhouse model program, they never felt there was any place they belonged, including their family. You know, I've had members say, I knew my parents and my family members loved me, and they wanted only the best for me. But don't think that didn't keep me from feeling like I was half a bubble off from them, you know, my whole life. And when I finally found a place where I was accepted and understood for me, that gave me a whole new lease on life.
Mark, I'll ask you to explain what the clubhouse model is.
Well, the clubhouse model goes back to 1947, when there was a small group of individuals with a diagnosis of severe mental illness who had come out of a psychiatric hospital and were then facing all of the issues of the rest of their life. And they found that if they met together and helped one another, they could really build a community of recovery. And that became Fountain House in New York City, which is now the largest clubhouse in the United States. But here's the issue. The second largest clubhouse in the United States is in St. Louis. It's not in Houston, not Chicago, not Los Angeles. It's in St. Louis. And the clubhouse model is really first of all, a club where members come, where nothing is done without member participation. It's member-founded, member-driven, and member-inspired. And the clubhouse provides a place, if someone wants to come and simply sit and be a part of the community, that's acceptable. If they want to come and help work on all the things that need to help build the clubhouse, which include helping members with housing, helping members get good square meals, participating in programs which Independence Center has really spearheaded around wellness, because we know from the statistics, the CDC tells us that in the United States, someone with severe mental illness will lose 25 years of their life. They'll die 25 years sooner than an average member of the population.
Why?
Because of some of the issues that go along with mental illness, which are substance abuse, poor nutrition, which leads to pre-diabetic states, then diabetes, cardiovascular. So it's a whole complex that tumbles down upon someone who is confronting these issues of severe mental illness. And I think a very interesting comment was made by Watson of the Crick and Watson fame, pointing out that most people experience cancer for 5 years or less. They will either die or they will be a survivor. Severe mental illness is a lifetime issue, but it can be a lifetime issue that can be confronted with a recovery model that works. And Clubhouse is not the only way to do it, but it is certainly one of the best.
Mike, one of the things that I've heard is that the medical profession in general kind of backs away from all of this, and this is part of the stigma, part of the discrimination that's involved. They don't really want to have anything to do with, quote, as Brittany put it, those wackos or those weirdos. Is that right?
Well, I do think that we need to move beyond a strictly medical model. It's true that the psychotropic medications are very important to bring some balance into people's lives, although they have some of the side effects that create the primary, you know, the primary health issues that then exacerbate the behavioral health issues. But we're very fortunate in that we are approved to be health homes. Where somebody's going to get their behavioral health care can coordinate both the primary and behavioral. And that's a major thing because on average, our members are going to see their psychiatrist about 3 or 4 or 5 times more frequently than they're going to see their primary care physician. So let's move the coordination role over to the place where they're going to have the most frequent contact. That's only to the good.
What role does the insurance industry play in all of this? Everyone should see the expressions I'm getting. Eyes are rolling and people are leaning back.
Well, we're supposed to have mental health parity where all behavioral health issues are funded in the same way. But it's more an aspiration yet than it is something realized. So we've got work to do there.
Yeah. You want to give me your experience in that regard, Brittany?
Yeah. Well, I can say it took me a very long time to get approved for Medicaid because I am disabled because of my mental health diagnosis. And once I was finally approved, it's been very, very helpful, you know, because of me being on Medicaid. That's the Independent Center found me was through a special outreach project in Missouri called the DM 3700 Project, where they outreach to people who could possibly benefit from the community support services or the clubhouse services. And they outreached to me, and you can say the rest is history. You know, because I've been a part of the Independent Center for over a year and a half now. And because of the help of Independent Center and the clubhouse model, now I'm back in school studying for my bachelor's degree in psychology. And I'm in my sophomore year now. And I have the Independent Center to thank for that, because had it not been for them, I was in a downward spiral when the Independent Center found me. And I hadn't realized it until I started becoming more engaged in the clubhouse. You know, and then I started feeling better. And I started coming more. And I started volunteering to do things. Found the motivation to go back to school. And finally realized that I am not my illness. I am not my past. You know, I am a woman who has conquered some of the worst things that life has thrown at me. You know, and I'm still standing.
Well, good for you. And it's great to hear that you're back to school. And sounds like what you want to do is help people like yourself.
It is.
Ultimately. Mike, tell me a little more detail, if you will, about finding these people and reaching out to them and bringing them into the fold, as it were.
Well, the DM 3700 program is tremendously – every taxpayer should be grateful that this program was launched. The Missouri Department of Mental Health, working with Missouri Health Net, came up with a list of the 3,700 highest users in the state, the people it was costing the state the most money to take care of, because they were showing up repeatedly in emergency rooms, which of course are the most expensive places in the world
Sure.
to get treatment. Some of these – there was one individual, I believe, who presented 200 times in 1 year, sometimes twice in 1 day at two different emergency rooms. Hmm. And they just said there has to be a better way to do this. So they created an enhanced rate for the community of providers those organizations like Independent Center Places for People, ADAPT, BJC Behavioral Health, Hopewell Center, to aggressively outreach these individuals. And here in Brittany, you see the kind of results that can take place out of that. I mean, no hospitalizations, coordinated medical care. It's a very, very different picture, thanks to really intelligent design of a comprehensive system of care.
It's so cost-effective. That's one of the most important issues that we have to get listeners to appreciate. This is a model with better outcomes that's more cost-effective, and that's why there are clubhouses being started not only in many states in the United States but all over the world.
Is the Affordable Care Act, assuming that it is fully implemented, which is in some question right mm-hmm. now, is that going to change change things, do you think, in terms of availability, accessibility?
I believe it will. Yeah. I believe it will. And it's going to be a difficult birth, we know, from the technology issues as well as the political issues. But Missouri is a perfect case where they have embraced that instead of resisting it. And using a well-coordinated system, they are finding ways to administer care and reduce costs in the long run. And understandably, the Affordable Care Act is that Missouri is going to need the federal government's help for 2 years. But then Missouri is saying, we're going to put in the programs that we can sustain over time, and the life cycle costs are going to be far less. And that's what we need to be concerned with as we look at state budgets and deficits, is really using our resources effectively. And Clubhouse uses resources very effectively. And Brittany is a perfect case of someone who is going to be a taxpaying contributor to our society with deep insights into issues of mental illness and how you recover. And she's going to bring that to bear. And that was not the case 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when she was spiraling down.
Back specifically now to the stigma issue, as time begins to wind down, let me ask each of you, what can be done, and perhaps what is being done, to erase the whole stigma question?
Well, we love every opportunity to talk about this. We can do it through faith communities. We can do this through school groups. But we have to change understanding of what mental illness is. It is so little understood. And I think a lot of that has to do with things like television shows that we all like to watch that paint strange pictures of strange people and just create a mythology almost around mental illness. We need people to understand, because where there is understanding, there is a real shift in attitude. But to understand what brain chemistry is and what a role that plays in living a stable life, it's huge.
Go ahead, Mark.
I think we need to shift some of our vocabulary from saying these people to saying our people, because these really are brothers and sisters, sons and daughters in families, and that's how clubhouses get started, is because a fire soul who's a mother or a sister or a brother understands that this is a better way, and they work to get clubhouses and other forms of services into their communities. But we have to understand that this is our families, one in every four families, 2% of the population facing severe mental illness. We have to change the vocabulary and stop saying these people and start saying our people, my family, my community.
Brittany, what recommendation would you have?
I would have to concur with Mike about understanding, because mental illness tends to follow in families where back in the 60s and 70s, nobody really understood or knew what mental illness was, or it was taboo to talk about, my weird brother, my weird sister. I think we need to embrace mental illness and talk about what the core issues are and get to understand that a person with mental illness is not a weirdo. It's not a wacko. They're just misunderstood.
And they're not people to be laughed at, as is the case on some situation comedies, which was alluded to
right,
a moment
right.
ago.
Yes.
We have a little over a minute left, and I know there's an event taking place tonight. The Flash Mob, is that correct? Who can tell me what's going on and where? So this, too, is to draw attention to the stigma issue.
Right. We are doing a mental health march, and the 600 people who are part of this conference are going to move out of the Hilton at the ballpark out onto Keener Plaza, and there will be a flash mob there, and then we'll march up Market, and again at Alo Plaza across from Union Station, there will be another flash mob before we go on to a dinner just up the street.
Are they just going to march, or there's going to be any other
action? There will be clubhouses from around the world that'll be carrying banners, or otherwise making their identity known. We've got march T-shirts, so we think it'll be a great demonstration. The song that we're going to be flash mobbing to has a lyric, talk about it, talk about it, talk about it, talk about it. And that's what we know needs to happen.
And this is a celebration. This is a march that celebrates recovery. It celebrates Independence Center in St. Louis and what a gem St. Louis has, not in the Cardinals, but in Independence Center.
Well, also in the Cardinals. Thank you very much. Thank you, man. Mark Lanier, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to see you. Brittany Adams-Jenkins, thank you. Good luck to you as you continue to pursue your new career. And Mike Keller, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Mayor Slay about how the World Series helps the local economy and the image of the city. And then we'll talk with Jerome Allure about his new book examining the two teams which met in the 1946 World Series, which were the St. Louis Cardinals and those Boston Red Sox. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.